You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Louise Cleary is a Brigidine sister from Melbourne, Australia, and she works with the organization Unanima, which is working to stop the trafficking of women in children. And she discussed the social change that needs to happen to stop human trafficking.
In 2000, when visiting the detention center in Melbourne, where undocumented and illegal immigrants and refugees are housed, in prison-like conditions, I might add, I met three Thai women. Through a young man we were visiting long-term, we gained their confidence, and Thuy, Phan and Srinak had been trafficked to Australia by a Thai woman and her Australian husband on the promise of work as hostesses in restaurants. We discovered that Thuy had worked in a massage parlour and was over 18 at the time of coming to Australia. But Phan and Srinak had been domestically trafficked in their own country and were underage, had come from rural villages. Their stories were those of the common ones we know: deception, confiscation of passports, brutal breaking in practices, and extensive exploitation in both legal and illegal brothels in Sydney and Melbourne. They had been subject to debt bondage of $35,000, which at that time took approximately 600 to 700 sexual encounters to pay off. The cruel hoax is that in our country, the traffickers had the practice of notifying the immigration department that there were illegals in a brothel when the debt bondage was almost fulfilled and served, and then they were picked up in a raid. They are then taken to detention and summarily, as Naomi was saying, deported very quickly. We began advocating for Thuy, Phan and Srinak, but they were deported to an unknown future and may be to being re-trafficked. And that is the pattern we are discovering with the case studies we've been gathering. The second story is an abridged version about a young Filipino woman whom I'll call Sarah. Sarah came from Pura, a family in the Batangas region of the Philippines. At 14, she went to work for a relative as a housemaid and was subsequently forced into prostitution. At 16, she was sold by her uncle as a mail order bride to an unknown Australian. She came to Brisbane, where she experienced brutal domestic violence from her husband, and where she was put into a brothel and used as a prostitute by his friends, acquaintances and anyone he could make money from. There was a long story in Sarah's getting away. Eventually she ran away, but she was found, put into detention and again deported. In 2002, I met Sarah in The Haven, a squalid holding facility in Manila for women who have been repatriated. I don't know her fate, but I do know she was very determined to assist other young women who've been deceived and trafficked into the sex industry. She was a remarkably strong young woman. I'm continually impressed, amazed and inspired by the real strength of these women. How they survive, I don't know. So as shocking as those stories might be, they're certainly not new to many of you who've got a concern about the trafficking in persons. But what they do illustrate as some of the underlying issues which we've touched on here last night and today that must be addressed if the scourge of human trafficking is to be stopped. The vulnerability of women living in poverty, inequality in male-female power relations, which often lead to the social and cultural acceptance of the right of the male to demand sex, the objectifying of women and the exploitation of children, the socially accepted view that women and girls are commodities, the cultural acceptance of violence against women, and fundamentally the outright abuse of the human rights of women and children. Unfortunately, in our case, in our country, they're often coupled with further abuse by legal and immigration systems, similar to those that have just been described, that criminalise the women and give impunity to the exploiters and traffickers. The reality is that we have a thriving sex industry in our country, and it can't be filled by women who are choosing that as a form of work. So there is an extreme number of people being trafficked into the country to fill the market, so to speak. Like many westernised countries, Australia was in denial about the extent of human trafficking happening in our country. It happened in Thailand, Cambodia, the Philippines, anywhere else, but it didn't happen in Australia. And the government was forced to face the issue when a young trafficked Thai woman died in the detention centre. And as a group of people concerned, some lawyers that we work with and some others, we mounted a campaign to take the government to court over and have a proper coronial inquest. And the coronial inquest showed that both the government and the outsourced detention centre facility runners of that were culpable and negligible. It was a breakthrough in getting better protection and recognition, A, of trafficking, and B, of getting an understanding that they had to really do something about training both of immigration officials and detention centre officials, etc. And that's another whole story which has developed positively. At the same time, we had commissioned research by Project Respect, and that was research was conducted in 2003-2004. The research found that at any one time there were approximately 1,000 women, some underage, trafficked into sexual slavery in the legal and illegal brothels in Australia. While some were cases of trafficking into domestic servitude and into the construction and hospitality industries, of our research, 96% were trafficked for the purposes of sexual exploitation. Why is this happening? One of the major reasons, and one that is often ignored, is because many men see sex as their right on demand. To return to Australia, it's not unique in its unenthusiastic admission of the problem of trafficking for sexual servitude, and it's even more reluctant recognition that there is a connection between the demand, the prevalence of prostitution, and the phenomenon of trafficking for sexual exploitation. And I believe that other countries that are debating whether or not to legalise prostitution could learn from what happens in my state of Victoria, and from Australia in general, where prostitution is legalised in 5 states and 1 territory. In Victoria, legalisation has spawned 3 times more illegal than legal brothels. There is minimal policing of the legal brothels, and the governments are accruing substantial tax revenue from the legal brothels. Demand has risen, and it has risen to such an extent that the only way the market can be filled is by trafficking in more and more women and then moving them from place to place. The pattern is about 6 weeks in Melbourne, over to Perth, the other side of the country, 5 or 6 weeks, and then to somewhere else. Customers are wanting more exotic, younger and cheaper women. There's been some research done in our country by Mary Sullivan that's worth reading, I think. Work here by Donna Hughes and Melissa Farley picks up some of this work on the around the legalisation debate, and then also connecting demand, prostitution and trafficking in our parts, this part of the world, in my part of the world. And then Jan McLeod has done quite a lot of work, as has Sue Bindell and Liz Kelly in the United Kingdom. So, turning to Unanima, we are, as Erin has outlined, a group of religious sisters and our colleagues, some of whom we employ and others who work with us in various levels of being colleague. We decided that we would address in this whole area. You may or may not know that religious congregations, women across the world, in 2001 made a commitment to address human trafficking as an international effort and to share our material and information across countries, from repatriation to protection to alternative income generating projects and all of that. So we're trying to do it at a number of levels. We're getting better at communicating the information. We decided to start to look at the hard question of demand, and I think that we come at it because we have many of our women and our colleagues, and we have 17,000 people working in 67 countries, and we have schools, health facilities, HIV/AIDS clinics, shelters, legal advocates, social workers, workers in refugee camps, and we are in contact with trafficked women and children on a constant basis. We continue these works, but we know that no amount of shelters or repatriation programs are going to stop the problem of trafficking. And in fact, at a recent meeting in Rome about 3 weeks ago, two Nigerian religious who've been working closely to prevent trafficking by education, both in rural areas of Nigeria and in the cities, saying they've been at it for a long time. And one of them said, I was talking to her and she said, we've been working to prevent trafficking by education of those who are vulnerable and their families for many years. And the problem just gets bigger. We're convinced that we must work against the demand to have any success in reducing the trafficking. We see, as Unanima, the valuing of human dignity and challenging the trafficking of women is being addressed as one way by our Stop the Demand in Trafficking in Women and Children. It was a campaign launched in March this year at the UN. Motivated by the fundamental ethical principle and imperative that the human rights of other human beings must be upheld and protected, and by the tenets of Catholic social teaching which give primacy to human dignity, we see this campaign as one way of confronting the issue. We have a pretty ambitious agenda and we could get shot in the process, but bad luck. We believe affirming the dignity of all human beings, especially women and children who are most vulnerable, will help stop demand. And that's why I like the title of this seminar. That eliminating factors that drive global trafficking and prostitution are linked with organised crime, particularly with the illicit use of the internet, and that will help stop demand if we address that as a factor. Removing some of the terms of industry and client and tourism, which mask and trivialise what's happening in the dehumanising reality for women and children as they suffer from the hands of pimps and profiteers and users, will help stop the demand. And publishing comprehensive campaigns that link demand with global trafficking, gender inequality, lack of decent work, and poverty are essential to eliminating sexual exploitation, and they will help stop demand. And implementing effective laws that criminalise the buyers of sex and seize the assets of profiteers will stop the demand. One way, we believe, in fighting the pernicious trade is certainly to get national and state or provincial laws established and enforced that protect victims of trafficking and prosecute and punish the perpetrators. Other ways changing what's happening is doing some change of the language we use that doesn't polarise people but doesn't also glamorise or mask the situation. Making the links between pornography demand and trafficking, and it's seen, and there's some good work being done by Gail Dines in trying to show how that is shaping sense of masculinity of young people as young as 10 and 12 in getting them to see pornography as a healthy way of filling in their leisure time, and then it does lead, as the research is beginning to show. Coalition Against Trafficking in Women in Asia Pacific has done quite a lot of good work with their first time project and some young men's camps. So it's around a resocialisation of gender and understanding gender inequality and a positive sense of masculinity. There's some positive things coming out of the First Offenders Prostitution Program in San Francisco. It's just been published, and I haven't analysed it a lot, but I did talk to the people recently, and it seemed to have some possibilities. To sum up, the sexual objectification of any female and the cultural violence that is accepted in some cultures and promoted by pornography must be stopped. No law should enshrine the right of men to buy women and girls for sexual gratification.